Greetings, Glenn Hauser here with Continental Media 0408. Produced October 25th, 2004. Continental Media is a more or less sesquimonthly supplement to my weekly program, World of Radio. Continental Media is made possible by Universal Radio for quality shortwave and amateur radio equipment. Phone them toll-free for a catalog, 1-800-431-3939, or inspect their website, www.universal-radio.com. And Universal also sponsors DXing.com, where you may hear the latest edition of this program and read my DX Listening Digests, among many other useful pages. Barbados used to be a shortwave broadcasting country. I don't recall ever hearing it myself. I think maybe they went off about the time or shortly before I became an active DXer in the 1950s. But cable and wireless used to have a transmission on an odd frequency in the 7 megahertz band of the broadcast station on Barbados. But that is very long gone. The island's still of interest in media other than shortwave. In the October NASWA Journal, Tom Sundstrom writes in his Net Notes column about the Voice of Barbados, which is on FM 92.9, but they also have a web stream at stream.caribsurf.com/STAR1. Another one is the Barbados Broadcasting System, 90.7 FM. It's barbadosadvocate.com/bbs.ram. for the web stream, although they do not actually have a visible web page that he could find. And then the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation has three stations, one of them on the web, Radio 900 AM, and it's one of the live365.com stations, /play/307076. Barbados is the most far out of the Windward Islands and thus the most difficult to DX from the mainland of North America, that is on FM sporadic Eskip. However, if you're in southern Brazil, it's not that difficult to pick up Barbados FM, among other Caribbean stations, thanks to trans-equatorial propagation. This has been happening again lately. There was a report appearing in the Atividade de Xix Bulletin by someone at the Atlantico Sul DX camp in Cananea, Ilha Comprida. It's off the southeastern coast of Brazil, and that's a de-expedition site where they can not only pull in medium wave and short wave, but also FM. Apparently it's at a location where there's not too much blockage by Brazil's many FM stations. The Barbados stations heard include 92.9, the Voice of Barbados, says Rubens Freis Pedroso, who's from Bandeirantes, Paraná. He was listening after 2300 UT when some of his friends were doing something else, and he says they really missed some interesting listening from Barbados on FM. The others heard were Hot FM on 95.3 and Liberty FM on 98.1, and it gives them SINPO readings with a signal strength of 5. Was fancy equipment required? Not really. He says he was using a Sony ICF SW7600GR with a 30-meter long-wire antenna. That, of course, being better for shortwave than FM. I know many of the Brazilian DXers have picked up this trans-equatorial FM DX from the Caribbean several thousand miles away with nothing but the built-in whip on their FM receivers, something we can only dream of doing up here in North America. By the way, this was around the middle of October. In a recent issue of DX Listening Digest, I made a somewhat snide remark about Radio Nacional de Venezuela spending so much time talking about their national hero Bolivar, who's been dead for over 200 years, and even renaming the country the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. Imagine if we did something like that, the Jeffersonian States of America, or, as Clay Jenkinson would say, it would be much more apropos to call us the Hamiltonian States of America. One of my regular readers is a Venezuelan, Adan Gonzalez, who's very much a partisan of President Chavez and who also writes excellent English, prompting this reply. I think it's so unfair of some DXers to criticize Radio Nacional de Venezuela's programming because of its constant mentions of the liberator Simón Bolívar and his legacy. For decades, the Venezuelan dominant classes tried to vanquish the liberator's legacy from the masses because they've always considered Bolívar a danger for their imperialist purposes. Pan-Americanism, internationalism, unity, all of them are bad words for imperialists. In the same way, Bolívar's thoughts about Latin America and its liberation from Spanish imperialism were not well seen by the American establishment, which in the early 19th century had already realized that by controlling all the continent, economically and politically, America would become a real superpower worldwide. That is what explains the sabotage of the Americans, I mean the American establishment, of Bolívar's plans to unify all the Latin American territories into one powerful country. So it can be said that Bolívar enemies are inside and outside Venezuela. Getting to current times, the arrival of the Bolivarian Revolution in 1999 brought the rebirth of nationalism, Bolivarianism, and the, should I say, Bolivarianism, and the feeling to struggle against any kind of imperialism. This rebirth of Bolivarianism and its ideals of Pan-Americanism, internationalism, and unity is expressed in every single part of the Venezuelan state and its institutions. Of course, it's quite normal that Radio Nacional's programs are devoted to Simón Bolívar's figure if it is supposed we are having a revolution based on his principles. That is why we are very proud of having the Bolivarian adjective in our country's official name. And besides, Bolivarianism goes far beyond Bolívar's individual person. It also means opportunities to poor people to overcome poverty and illiteracy and get a better life. I know it would be very hard to understand if you're not living in Venezuela, but our revolution is a fact. Making jokes about our Bolivarian adjective or comparing that with imaginary definitions applied to the U.S. official name does not help at all to have a serious discussion about real politics. We are not ashamed of calling ourselves Bolivarians because our past is our pride. Would you Americans be ashamed of your past or your heroes? Fun and Games at Radio Havana, Cuba, October 10th at 2147 UT. I ran across 11760 playing a tape at several times normal speed, far more than double, not just speech but musical breaks and actualities, judging from the different background sounds. The speed kept increasing, and it was hard not to find this hilarious. About 2152, it suddenly slowed down to normal just long enough to identify the language as French. Then it sped up again with various pauses for dead air. Must have run out of program by 2154, when there was nothing but dead air, and finally started up the interval signal at normal speed 2 minutes later. No one was minding the store, or if they were, there was no idea of what to do about the problem. I was visualizing loads of tangled reel tape on the floor, or wound around the capstan. Oscar de Cespedes in Miami sends a Chicago Tribune story via the La Nueva Cuba website. TV beamed at Cuba caught in jam, published October 18th, written by Gary Marks, foreign correspondent. For 12 years, Antonio Diegues has diligently gone to work as director of TV Martí, the U.S. government finance station aimed at bringing news and info to the Cuban people. There is only one problem. Almost no one on the island has ever seen it. Cuban officials have jammed its signals since the broadcast began in 1990, saying it's an act of aggression and a violation of Cuba's sovereignty. If you don't have ratings, you don't have ratings, quipped Diegues, a 68-year-old Cuban-American immigrant. We don't care. We keep doing our job. We produce a hell of a newscast. After years of failure, the Bush administration launched a new effort in late August to break through the jam by beaming the TV signal from a U.S. military plane flying off the southern coast of Florida. The results are uncertain. The frustrating tale of Diegues and his TV Martí colleagues, along with Radio Martí, is one of the more controversial and costly chapters in the battle between the U.S. and Latin America's only communist nation. Radio and TV Martí cost U.S. taxpayers about $27 million a year. The day that Cubans can watch CNN and purchase foreign newspapers, there won't be a need for these broadcasts, says Frank Calzon, executive director of the Center for a Free Cuba, an anti-Castro group in Washington. Critics say TV Marti is a $10 million a year boondoggle that should be shut down. The C-130 broadcast is the latest attempt by the U.S. to penetrate Cuban jamming after failing to reach large numbers of Cubans through satellite transmission and a transmitter fixed on a helium-filled balloon tethered 10 kilofeet above the Florida Keys. Philip Peters, a former State Department official and Cuba expert at the Lexington Institute, says you cannot repeal the laws of physics. It's always going to be easier for Cuba to jam the broadcasts than for the U.S. to get them through. The State Department's Office of the Inspector General said in a 1999 report that Radio Marti's news report suffered from a lack of credibility and professionalism. Diegas says the station is making a push to improve programming, even as Cuban officials use Soviet-era helicopters packed with jamming equipment to continue disrupting the signal. While Radio Marti recently switched to an all-news format, TV Marti is spicing up its lineup with movies, music videos, and Major League Baseball, along with programs about human rights and other issues. One new show, The Office of the Chief, is a sitcom following the tribulations of a fictitious leader of a fictitious island nation. With his gray beard and olive-green military uniform, the fictitious head of state bears a striking resemblance to Castro. There's a lot more cooperation about trans-border broadcasting between Mexico and the U.S., but those doing it had better be careful. Doug Smith reports to the NRC list about an FCC fine against Uniradio, a San Diego company, $25,000 for violating the terms of their 325C permit. The company fed Padres baseball games across the border to XEMO 860 in Tijuana, transmitting programming across the border to a station that will broadcast it back into the U.S. requires a permit, pursuant to this part of the Communications Act. Uniradio did hold a valid permit. However, applicants for a permit must certify that the foreign station operates in full compliance with all international treaties concerning interference to U.S. stations. The fine was levied because the FCC believes Uniradio knew that XEMO had increased power from 5 to 20 kilowatts and moved closer to the Pacific Ocean, resulting in an increase of interference to KRLA 870 on the next frequency. XEMO holds a valid Mexican license for the power increase, but the increase is contrary to international treaties. We moan about media concentration. In the U.S., a few major companies, especially Clear Channel, owning most of the radio stations, but that's at least the case in Mexico and maybe worse. Horacio Negro forwarded to Conexión Digital a story posted at Yucatan.com that 10 groups dominate the Mexican radio market. The great majority of TV concessions in the 31 entities of the country operate as simple repeaters of one of the television channels of Televisa or TV Azteca. As for radio concentration, according to data from the SCT, the Secretariat of Communications and Transport, equivalent to the FCC, and of the CIRT, the Cámara de la Industria de Radio y Televisión, which is the trade organization, equivalent to the NAB, the major concentration of control of 1,142 licenses is in a nucleus of 10 large groups, and they give the percentages down to two decimal places. I'll be rounding off, but I think it will be of interest to name these groups and in the order from the largest to the smallest. We also hear these names often mentioned on the air in connection with IDs. The biggest is Radio Rama, 16% of the frequencies. Then ASIR, or CMR, 13%. CIMA SOMER, which controls Núcleo Radio Mil, 12%. OIR, OIR, Radio Centro, 8%. PROMOSAT, or Grupo Promedios, 5%. MVS, 4%. Cadena Raza, also 4%. Organización Radio Fórmula, 4%. Multimedios Estrellas de Oro, 3%, Radio SCA, 3%. And the article in Spanish goes into quite a bit more detail about how these groups have managed to gain more and more control, especially in certain markets. You'll find a reference to the DX Listening Digest issue where you may read more about this and everything else I mention on this program in the summary for Continent Media 0408 at worldofradio.com. BBC Monitoring published an editorial analysis by Ian Liston-Smith in late September, Pirate Radio Flourishing in Paraguay and the Border Area, so-called tri-border area, straddling the confluence of the Paraná and Iguazú rivers near the spectacular Iguazú Falls, where the borders of Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil meet. This culturally diverse area has a reputation as a center of corruption, drugs, arms and vehicle smuggling, money laundering, and counterfeiting. But the area is also a center for pirate radio activity. Over 40 stations fill the FM band in the region. Of these, about 30 are broadcasting illegally from in and around Ciudad del Este, although their names and number vary daily. The actual population of the region, numbering nearly 500,000, is concentrated in the three cities of Foz do Iguazú in Brazil, Ciudad del Este, Paraguay, and Puerto de Iguazú, Argentina. It has been home to a large community of Arab descent, now numbering between 20 and 30,000, for almost 60 years, who came to this corner of South America to trade. Many also came from Lebanon in 1973 to escape the war. The three cities are also home to smaller numbers of South Asians, Koreans, Chinese, Taiwanese, and Japanese. Local observers say a few of these pirate stations provide a voice for small communities not catered for by legitimate broadcasters, and at least one, Radio Mundial FM, is actively seeking to become legal. However, the majority are simply commercial ventures making money out of cheap advertising, or are owned by religious groups who use their station to request donations from the public. In the past, during the run-up to an election, the number of pirate broadcasters has increased significantly. A prominent citizen of Ciudad del Este said that funding a pirate can be an effective way for a politician to reach a wider audience. All the broadcasts are in Spanish or Portuguese and only transmit on the FM band. The Portuguese language stations are clearly audible in Foz do Iguaçu, carrying ads aimed at listeners in that city. Perhaps surprisingly, no pirate stations broadcast in Arabic for the comparatively large Arab community. The reason given is that the Arabs, especially the young, have taken on local identity, so there's no need for an Arabic station and no commercial drive to start one. The fact that no legal stations include any Arabic programs in their schedules either tends to support this. Legal broadcasters condemn the pirates on the following grounds. Their advertising rates are between 10 and 50% of those charged by legal stations. Their often low technical standards can be a cause of interference to legitimate broadcasters. They do not adhere to broadcasting standards of decency or libel. And they pay no license or tax. The Brazilian telecoms agency and Argentina's equivalent both quickly close unlicensed stations in Foz do Iguaçu and Puerto Iguaçu. The pirates therefore locate their transmitters in Ciudad del Este, where the Paraguayan authorities have insufficient resources to quickly find and close them. The owner of Radio Corpus, Orlando Valdez, is president of ARDAP, Asociación de Radiodifusores del Alto Paraná. This was formed to represent the interests of the 27 radio stations in Paraguay's Alto Paraná province and endeavors to improve the levels of objectivity among its members. More recently, with the backing of the Paraguayan authorities, the group has also embarked on a campaign to combat radio piracy. One of the group's tactics is to broadcast the names of businessmen, minor mafia officials, and politicians when they are known to be behind a particular pirate station, once their station has been closed by the authorities. Five owners of these stations have also recently been jailed for short periods. When acting in unison, each ARDAP member is then afforded protection against threats that could follow if single stations or individuals acted in isolation. According to Orlando Valdez, the campaign is enjoying some success, although not as much as was hoped, since some district attorneys are said to still be taking bribes in order to drop their investigations. Three similar groups exist in other regions of Paraguay, to improve broadcasting standards, but only Ardap, due to local conditions, extends its activity to exposing pirate radio owners and their financial supporters. But perhaps the area's pirate broadcasting days are numbered. Exposure as a financial backer of such a station is rapidly becoming unacceptable in the public's eyes, who are now keen to see the region's reputation cleaned up. Well, there may be no Arabic on those stations, but there is an Islamic talk show in English in Chicago. Here's another Chicago Tribune story. Islamic talk finds a spot on the radio dial. Published October 3rd by Genève Abdo. Radio Islam, the first daily English-language Muslim program in the U.S., hopes to mix serious issues and lighter fare. Dressed in a long white tunic, Altaf Kaysarudin sat in front of a large mic and greeted his last guest, who was calling into the Chicago station from a cell phone. For a few anxious seconds, there was silence. Then the guest, a comedian named Preacher Moss, sounded a loud Salam Aleikum, the Arabic greeting. The host breathed a sigh of relief and said, "Tell us about your national tour. Allah made me funny." Such was the first program of Radio Islam, which debuted Friday night to a limited audience on a small station, WCEV AM 1450. As America's first daily English-language program about Islam, the show may never earn the ratings of Howard Stern, but over time, Radio Islam hopes to raise serious issues as well as make listeners laugh. In cities such as Detroit, with a large Arab and Muslim population, private stations for years have aired Muslim or Arab-sponsored programs in Arabic, but Radio Islam, broadcast in English on a commercial station, stands apart for being accessible to a wider audience. The show is on every day, perhaps they mean every weekday, from 6 to 7 p.m. Central on WCEV, a mom-and-pop station whose call letters stand for We're Chicago's Ethnic Voice, created 25 years ago. I've checked, and as far as I can tell, unfortunately, this station does not webcast. Thanks to Mike Cooper for sending us that story. Catholic Radio Update is ecumenical to the extent of including news about Orthodox radio. And guess what? There is an Orthodox program now heard in Tulsa. According to OCN, in Fort Lauderdale, Come Receive the Light, the National Orthodox Christian Media Ministry, just keeps growing. It starting September 12th. It has been heard each week on KCFO AM 970 in Tulsa, Sunday mornings at 9:30 Central. It's the national media outreach of Orthodox churches. OCN stands for, what else, Orthodox Christian Network, based in Fort Lauderdale. Their website is www.receive.org. Here are some comments by Carl Zuck, N2KZ on the IRCA list. Clear Channel is a huge success short term. Radio is a business, and Clear Channel excels in efficient, cost-effective consolidation and mass marketing. Long-time problems will kill them. People are switching to iPods, satellite, and the Internet to hear new tunes and much more variety. Time-condensing, audio processing, and heavy commercial loads make drive-time radio unlistenable. Take away all local content, and the result is mass alienation. The cherry on the cake? IBOC. Let's make analog-free radio technically impossible to listen to. Sirius and XM are sitting on a gold mine. The traditional radio industry could not destroy itself any better. It breaks my heart because it used to be so much fun to be in radio and enjoy it as a listener. When was the last time you heard the name of a song mentioned? In New York City, you can hear songs for years and not know what they are. It reminds me of the old diner routine with John Belushi on SNL. You take cheeseburger and Pepsi because that's all we offer. Don't like it? Next in line, please. I vote for satellite radio to compete directly with traditional radio with local content. The NAB and Clear Channel have destroyed our fun. If we take our ears elsewhere, the worth of their giga-dollar business will evaporate. Thanks for listening to my rant. I mourn the loss of my favorite medium every day. Remember when you used to want to listen to the radio? When you looked forward to listening to the radio? Some international vacuum comments from Harry Helms in Texas on the NRC AM list. One thing I've noticed about XM is that its in-house produced channels, mainly music, generally sound exponentially better than its out-of-house programming. The only exceptions are the BBC World Service. You can actually hear the news announcers shuffling their papers as they read, and a few major syndicated talk shows like Art Bell and Phil Hendry. Sports channels uniformly sound bad, especially sporting news radio and college football feeds. They sound like they're coming on over a phone line. It points out the importance of a good audio feed regardless of the modulation system used. You see a similar phenomenon on HDTV. Lighting, etc., is so much more important for the best quality on HDTV than it is on analog. I mainly watch TV for sports, and I notice how NBC and CBS consistently seem to have better HDTV pictures than ABC and ESPN for the same type of events, such as NFL football. On the WTFDA list, Doug Smith tells us about another Super Bowl-related fine, not about a wardrobe malfunction. Global Radio has been fined $10,800. They applied to operate six temporary low-power FM stations at Super Bowl 37 in San Diego on 89.1, 92.9, 93.7, 96.9, 104.1, and 106.9. The FCC granted two frequencies, 93.7 and 96.9, and the call letters WN3XFL. They denied the other four, stating interference would be caused to other U.S. and Mexican stations. Global turned on a radio, didn't hear anything on the four denied frequencies, and lit up transmitters on those frequencies anyway, along with the two legal ones. They got caught. FCC engineers found 89.1 operating actually on 88.98. Upon being contacted, Global admitted to using the four denied frequencies and got fined for three of them. Al Merriman wrote in NRCDX News September 21st, the 540 station in Pocomoke City, Maryland, is identifying officially on the hour as WGOP Pocomoke City. It's very muffled and rapidly spoken, immediately followed by a loud jingle, 540 WDMV Delmarva. What are they trying to prove? Why change your call and then do your best to make people think you have not? And why move the call WDMV, Wonderful Delmarva, to a station that can't even be listened to over here? I'm sure the owners have a very good and logical reason. Well, here's my scenario. WGOP was grabbed for trafficking. It could be a potentially lucrative call sign to sell to the far right. The station itself may be owned by Democrats, embarrassed to be heard uttering those calls. That's Continental Media 0408, also known as World of Radio Extra 53. I'm Glenn Hauser.